Your time now, 11:55, and this is normally the, we call it the psychology section, but it's not really, I mean, it's about lived experience at the end of the day. Everything psychology in life, to be very honest with you, and that is exactly what we're going to be talking about. What are we going to be focusing on exactly? Well, as a parent, you carry so much responsibility to not only your children, but also yourself as an individual. Just think about it, right? You can almost feel that weight on your shoulders sometimes. And today we're going to be looking at focusing on what it's like to be a dad. The kind of pressure that society puts you under as a father, and the kind of challenges a male parent faces. And I'm going to be introducing you to some of our guests. And we all know 16 days of activism against women and child abuse in this country. Everybody, especially men, need to stand up. Good men mustn't be quiet. Good men need to be part of the solution as well. And whether it's your colleague making a lewd remark about someone in the office and you standing in the kitchen and you just giggling nervously but you don't like it, keeping quiet's not going to help anybody, right? So today we're going to be chatting to Stanley, who is a father and shared his short story in the DGMT second edition of the Human Factor publication. We also chat to Wessel van den Berg, who's a dad and does care work as an activist as well, a researcher and a counselor. But I'm not going to do all these introductions. You're going to be introducing yourselves. I think that's so important. We start off with Kwanda Ndoda, who's the DGMT Innovations Manager. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Of course, Wessel van den Berg, I did a basic introduction to you earlier. Very good to have you on air.
Thanks, Kino. It's great to be with you.
And Stanley Maseche, who wrote the short story, Being the Father I Always Wanted. Stanley, good to have you on the show.
Likewise, sir.
Thank you. Now, let's start with you, Kwanda. Let's talk a little bit about DGMT and what it does. What's the purpose behind it?
So, I mean, DGMT is a public innovator. So we believe in investing in human potential. Mm-hmm. What we are is an endowment, and so we work with civil society trying to support them and trying to better them and trying to work along the same causes, basically.
How do you do that?
So we work with organizations. They apply for funding to us, and then we evaluate what kind of work they're doing, and if they align with our strategy, then we help them and we think through solutions with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's quite a lack of space to be playing in.
It is amazing. It's an amazing organization, and it's amazing work that we are doing.
You deliver impact at the end of the day, and you can see people's mindsets, lives change, which is such a nice space.
We aim to. Well, very difficult to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course it is, but at least you're trying. You can put your head down at night knowing that you actually trying to do something which will impact or potentially will impact other people.
Of course, yeah.
No, that's wonderful. So thank you very much for joining us. Now, let's just tell us your story, Wessel.
So, Kino, I usually introduce myself by saying that I'm the father of two children, a daughter who's 6 and a son who's 3. Mm-hmm. And in my spare time, I work at Tonka Gender Justice.
Ah!
I coordinate the Men Care Global Fatherhood Campaign. So we advocate for getting fathers more involved in care work, and we do it from the personal level, from my own house, right up to the structural level. So we've recently seen the enactment of paternity leave, and we had something to do with that.
Oh, tell us about what did you have to do with that?
So Sonke joined this one-man activist, a guy called Henri Terblanche.
Ah, I remember chatting to him.
Yes, exactly, who worked with the ACDP to launch the first private member's bill for parenting leave.
Yeah.
So it's actually, you know, what was really nice about that bill, and it's so Sonke, Kusatu, and Henri were the three who then took it through to the portfolio committee and supported its enactment in the end.
Wow.
It took government another year to get to the point of actually implementing the thing, but at least it was signed off and approved, and it's through. So what it means now is that fathers can, from November 2019, so a month ago, access 10 days of paid paternity leave.
10 days?
10 days, paid the same way as UIF. Maternity leave has been increased in terms of the benefits. It's up to 66%.
Wow.
And for me personally, something that's really cool is adoption leave is now available in South Africa.
Oh, wow. So why do you give a damn?
because I'm a father.
I asked you the question, but because it's so easy for us to go in our lives and not and just ignore everything else that's happening and live in your own little bubble.
You know, I think fatherhood is for myself, for my children, for my wife, and for the country. I believe it's an acupuncture point. It's a catalytic point.
We can
make a real long-term difference to all the people in the country's lives if we manage to shift men's contribution to care work.
Yeah, and I want to dig into the care work side of things in more detail a bit later. But Stanley Maseke, of course, who wrote that short story, Being the Father I Always Wanted. Your story, Stanley.
Yes, sir.
Tell us your story. Who is Stanley Maseke and why do you do what you do?
Stanley Maseke is a teacher by profession, but I'm not practicing. I'm a businessman based in the mine. I do general maintenance, and I have about 7 to 8 full-time employees, and I also do piggery on the other side.
Okay, now, talk to me about Being the Father I Always Wanted. Why did you write that short story, and what, in essence, is the crux of it?
You know, the story was inspired by how I grew up. I think had I grown in a proper family, I wouldn't have known how much love is needed by kids. I come from a broken family. I have a father who is alive. He's aged about 69, but we don't have a relationship at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I realized that I needed love when I started growing and you have friends or you have your roommate at school who often gets visits from his father, and then you ask yourself, where is my father? Does he even ever think of me? And then you watch reality shows like Kumbule Kaya, people looking for their fathers, fathers looking for their lost kids, and you ask yourself, where is mine? Does he ever even dream about me? So I thought, no, I don't want my kids to go through what I went through.
Absolutely.
So I want to be a better father.
Tell us about your kids.
I have three. I have 12, a 12-year-old separate. He's in Soweto.
Yeah.
I have him with a very wonderful mother, and then his name is Onalena. Mm-hmm. I have a very, very good relationship with the mother. Mm-hmm. And two kids with my ex-wife, and we also have a very, very wonderful relationship as well. And the kids are aged 4 and 2.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Now, I just want to do that introduction so we know who you are. And, so, you know, just talking about men in society in relation to gender-based violence, I hate using the acronym because it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
yeah, this is GBV stuff. Anyway, gender-based violence, right? What does fatherhood mean? And let's start with you, Vissel. What does fatherhood mean to you within that context?
So, Kino, at Sonke, we've always seen fatherhood as a way to actually break the cycle of violence.
Mm.
If you can expose children to role models that are trustworthy, that are caring, that are gentle, and that solve conflict in non-violent ways, children will grow up to accept that as normal. Currently, we have children exposed to egregious levels of violence, and especially men's use of violence. So when we say gender-based violence, you know, it's mostly men who use violence.
Yes.
Of course, you know, in fact, men are actually also victims of violence, but it's mostly men who use violence. And if we want to prevent violence, we have to start thinking long-term and focusing on how children are experiencing how adults behave. Mm. It's really interesting to see what the evidence shows that girls grow up to, if girls are exposed to violence in the household, so either from or seeing their parents in violent interaction or exposed to violence themselves, they grow up to accept that as normal. And they are unfortunately at greater risk of experiencing violence when they're adults.
Yeah.
It's same for boys. When boys see violence being perpetrated, they are at greater risk of using violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we can start to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And I think fatherhood is a great entry point to demonstrate caring masculinity.
Yeah, and that's sorry, Quanta, you were going
to
say?
I was just going to add to what Vessel. How could I? I was just going to add to that is that there's a concept called toxic stress. And so what happens with a child is if a child is abused or a child is neglected quite young, they experience toxic stress, and that actually influences the architecture of their brain.
Okay.
So it influences them academically and how they act socially. And so we know that fathers are always seen as the disciplinarians. So a lot of the times, some of the if we could get fathers to act a certain kind, or just the men in general in society to act a certain kind of way, and maybe understand the ramifications of something like toxic stress, then we can even make an economic argument in terms of early childhood development as to why fathers need to step up.
That is fascinating. And we also live in a country, by the way, where we have a lot of single parent households.
Yes, exactly.
And so I like the fact that you mention not just fathers, but men in general, because there's that in you could be a father figure, if you like, to someone within that community.
Yes.
And it really is about being a male within the context of South Africa, isn't it?
Yes.
So keynote, DG Murray Trust supported Sonke and the Human Sciences Research Council to do this State of South Africa's Fathers report last year. And that was exactly what we found. You know, we've got this very narrow lens on fatherhood as being a father who lives in the same house with his child, who is his biological child.
Yeah.
And the reality is simply not the case. Stanley's story demonstrates that fatherhood goes way beyond co-residence and the biological fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Involvement is much more important than whether you live in the same house or not.
Absolutely.
And involvement is much more important than whether this is your biological child or not.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's about the emotional side of the brain, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes.
And about whether you feel loved or not. Stanley, I mean, you were saying that, questioning about where your dad was and saying, because that obviously hurt. It's not a logical process. It's not like, oh, my dad's not here. Let's think about why. It's the emotional part that gets affected by that, and you feel like you're not loved. So what does fatherhood mean to you within the context of what we're talking about at the moment?
One should not only be a father, but you should be a father figure on top of that.
Yes.
You should be this human being that nephews and nieces and, you know, like children from the neighborhood, be that person that they look up to, like a father, even though they don't have maybe fathers or like their parents are deceased, and even if they are alive, they'd say, I wish I had a father like that person. He's so wonderful, he's so loving, and he's so protective. He's such a very, very protective being. Like just this past Friday, I had a robbery at home.
Yeah.
My house was ransacked, and then thrown into the bush. You know, one of the first people that I thought of after praying was my father, and I thought, "Where's my father? I wish you could come and protect me." And remember, I haven't spoken to the man for almost 10 years now, but I thought of him. I even wrote him an SMS yesterday telling him of my ordeal. So you have to be a role model to your kids. One other thing, preparation.
Yeah.
Once you father a child, make preparation. Bed, make a solid foundation for them so that they must have a proper legacy. Even beyond your life.
Absolutely. And we're talking about all of this, and one person just pops into my mind, and it's someone we spoke to yesterday. He's a pro big wave surfer. He's not particularly involved in any organization or whatever, or organization, but he, and his name's Frank Solomon, travels the world. But he is a man who saw people. He's a white South African. He's got money, lives in Hard Bay, saw this on TV, the young boy being shot in the face with a rubber bullet in Hangburg. As we speak today, he's taken a lot of those young people under his wing, taught them how to do life-saving, taught them, teaching them life skills. And that there is a father figure, as you were saying. And it's a lived experience of what it is.
Even recently on... Not to interrupt you, even recently on my Facebook, I thought about this offense, and I even posted that financially at the moment I'm not doing that well. My business has been going down the drain a bit because of high competition in the mind. And I made a post on Facebook that I just want to get one kid who's orphaned that I can buy Christmas clothes for. And then, you know, I got such an enormous response and even positive messages via inbox. And on Friday, during that transaction, when I was kidnapped, I made a vow with God. And I said, God, like, if you save my life, I'm going to increase the number of kids that I'm going to buy close to purple to five.
Yeah.
Let me leave, and then those kids will have a wonderful Christmas.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And in everyday life, obviously my wife's a teacher, comes home, says, this is one boy who never has food. Never, ever. And you know what education is without a full tummy. And I encourage other families to do it. Every day we put in, he's got his own lunchbox. You put simple things, man. It's not, I mean, you don't have to become extravagant about it, but it's simple things that can change people's lives and show that others care. And I think that's important. Let's go to Louis in Kenwyn, who's been listening to this, wants to make a comment. Hi there, Louis. Good morning.
Hi, Kino. Hi to your guest there this morning as well. Just a quick one. Your guest mentioned that he comes from a dysfunctional family. Now, I come from a single-parent family. Okay, so why has society branded us as dysfunctional or broken homes?
That's a good question.
When that's not the case.
Yeah, and sometimes you can have a happier family as a single. But I think he talks from his own, you know, experience, and he can only use that as. But anyway, let me not speak on his behalf. But I agree with you, Louis. You can have single parent households and very happy ones at it.
Exactly. See, so when we use words like that, it's kind of seeded. You know, we've planted
seeds
that we come from a dysfunctional family, which we don't, because our mom or our dad was brilliant. Anyway, that's just my little comment on it.
I love it. And thanks for making it. Let's go to Stanley to actually respond to that. Stanley?
Can you rephrase his question, please?
No, he was saying, why do when we talk about single-parent households, we always call it dysfunctional? Because he grew up in a single-parent household, and he had all the love in the world, and he doesn't feel that it was dysfunctional.
Well, I don't remember using that word dysfunctional. Mm. I was only commenting on the absence
of my
father.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, yes. So Vessel and Kwanda wants to make a comment here as well. Vessel?
Sure. I think Louis' comment is really valuable because most families in South Africa actually do not have the biological father living in the same household. So it's mostly headed by mothers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we need to be clear that that doesn't mean that those households only have a mother as a caregiver. It's usually an extended family.
Yes.
And what's interesting is that in that extended family, there are men.
Men. Mm.
But they often do not participate in that care work. And there's a real opportunity there.
I was going to talk about care work. Just the concept of care work, just unpack that for me, because we've been using it a couple of times.
Sure. So Kina, you know, fathers are often really comfortable to play with children. If they are engaging with children, that's a great entry point for father involvement. But the hard work is moved to the mother.
Changing the nappy, washing the clothes.
Exactly. You know, a question to fathers, do you know on which shelf your son's favorite shirt is?
Mm.
When you go shopping, do you know which peanut butter brand he likes?
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things where you actually need to start taking responsibility for thinking about what it takes to support a little person.
Absolutely. That is such a profound comment to make. Kwanda?
And I think just to add to that, I think a lot of men feel kind of alienated in that they can't partake in caring for the child.
Yes.
Because society, there's this whole idea that men must only be material providers. I mean,
yes.
The ATM fathers, you know, if you can't produce materials, if you can't do that, then you're not a father. So I think that concept is very dangerous, because if we were to allow men to kind of take part in care work, we can have like a kind of cash for care kind of transition, if you will.
Absolutely.
And then we can have many more men partaking and, you know, playing the role that they're supposed to be playing anyways. And then that would have ramifications for maintenance. It could have ramifications for inhlaulo, for ilobola, you know.
Yeah.
It could, big things could come from that if we kind of could change that sentiment as society.
Love it. I mean, we never have enough time to have these conversations, but Vessel?
Just one comment on that. You know, there's a positive reinforcing cycle there.
Mm.
If there's a bond between the man and the child, he's more likely to be financially supportive. And if he's actually financially supportive, he's more likely to be interested in being involved.
Because some dads do get alienated from their kids. And I think that is a reality. Not all of them. I wouldn't even say in the majority of cases, but dads get alienated. And also society hits on men.
Exactly.
Right? If you're a man, you're this. And I mean, I can understand where the sentiment comes from, because you made the point that men are the ones involved in violence, whether it's violence against men or women or children. It's mainly men. I mean, you have to read the but it's not helpful to paint people. And I've done some work with Avon, for example, on their programs. And the one thing I've said, and I think a lot of people agree, is that men need to be part of the conversation, man.
So, Kino, we often think about this as an individual problem. And what you point out is really valuable, that it's actually a structural problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that I don't spend time with my son and my daughter as much as my wife does is because my job, promoting fatherhood, ironically, takes me away from them quite often. And the marketplace has been set up to position men in the professional, getting out there, strategic thinking space, and women as caretakers. If we manage to get men involved in care work, it will also allow women to take up more economic activity. But it's of course, it's such an individual frustration, but I want to let all the parents out there know that it's not only an individual responsibility. There's actually a societal dynamic at play here.
That is so true.
It takes a village.
It certainly takes a village to raise a kid. Stanley?
Yes, sir?
Are you listening to what your colleagues are saying here? Would you like to add anything?
Yeah, one other thing that impedes fathers to play their role is the relationship that they have with the mothers. Some mothers are using kids to fight their battles.
Yeah.
And as a result, it creates animosity.
Yes.
And the father doesn't have that room to come and play that fatherly relationship with the kids. And, you know, like when two elephants fight, the grass
suffers.
Is the one that gets damaged, and is the one that gets affected more.
That is so true. Sorry, Konda, you were saying?
I'd like to ask Stanley a question.
Go for it.
Stanley, would you like to just explain to everyone what the names of your children mean? I think it's quite precious.
Oh.
Okay.
The names of your children, what they mean.
The first one is Onalena.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means God is with me.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the second one is Sali Ona.
Yeah.
It means he is still God.
Wonderful.
And then the last one is Ho'aba Ona. Initially, I didn't want any girl child. I only wanted boys because I'm one protective person.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll do better with boys. So,
like all of us.
Yeah.
And the last one?
God who decides.
So you're such a thoughtful human being. Ona,
it means he's the one who chooses.
Uh-huh. So much. Yes. You know, it's really thoughtful. Very, very, very precious indeed. Now, gentlemen, we literally have about... actually, let me just wrap. Because if I... Actually, no. I'm going to give everybody a couple of seconds in closing to be able to achieve what we'd like to achieve. Where does one start? Because you've got to start the journey somewhere. There might be someone there wanting to start this journey of care. Wessel?
So... I think, you know, taking a step outside of our comfort zone and actually putting it out there to the partner, to the family, I want to be involved in a different, new way with the child.
There we go. And take the first step. Okay, I'm going to leave it there before Joe gets upset with me. I want to thank you so much, Kwanda Ndura, for coming through.
Thank
you. Thank you very much. Great having you on the show today. And Wessel van den Berg, thank you so much. Bye-bye, donkey.